Tuesday, May 30th, and welcome to a special edition of the Damon Bruce Show, brought to you by Ike's Sandwiches, a very special college football video game edition. This is the most hyped and the most anticipated sports video game release, if not just video game release of all time. It's been a decade since this game has come out due to a number of legal maneuvers, and it's a whole bunch of research of legal maneuvers that brings my guest to the topic. Matt Brown of the Extra Point newsletter, he covers the business of college sports. And by doing that, he found a trail of licensing breadcrumbs, which brought him to more information about this video game than he ever even sought out to look for. And because of that, he had a run-up to become an authority on this game. He just got back from Orlando, where he actually got to play it. And Matt Brown, thank you so much for joining me here today. I really appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
After having flown down to Orlando, having played the game, please, just I'm going full Rorschach test.
Sure.
What you saw, what was your first impression of college football 2025?
You know, I wrote this here that there were two really big takeaways I had from my experience. And I say that with the caveat here that I am not a capital G gamer. I'm not somebody who plays video games competitively. And so there's going to be a group of people that are looking at this through that lens and analyzing the physics of different animations and talking about, you know, and that's not exactly my expertise. But from my experience, the first thing I was very clear is that the people that made this game understand and deeply love and care about college football. There's clearly a very significant amount of detail that's placed on depicting pageantry, that on atmosphere, and on what makes individual programs unique. You know, the line that was used both formally and informally there is every team is somebody's favorite team. So we want somebody who's playing San Jose State to have the same emotional experience of that's my stadium, that's my song, that's my locker room tunnel, that's my dorm in the background, as somebody at Texas and Ohio State and Alabama. And I even experimented with, you know, I played with Sam Houston State, you know, a new FBS team a little bit. I played with Tulane and saw many of those same things. So I think if that's part of what makes college football emotionally engaging and separate from college, from the pros, you'll definitely see that in this game.
And these
I think, yeah.
This is incorporated into the game beyond a cutaway scene. It's like it happens throughout the game.
Yes. And let me give you an example, right? One of the things that the development staff, you know, talked to us about, and we even saw this a little bit in the game, is you want certain home field experiences to feel scary. You know, and you should see while playing the game that that's a different kind of experience. So as an example, right, if you are bringing in a true freshman quarterback and a relatively inexperienced team, even a very talented team, maybe 90 overall team, into Death Valley at night or into a whiteout at Penn State, it's not just that the controller is shaking and it's not just that you can't make the same pre-snap reads, but that your consistency, your mental toughness is going to be really challenged. And one of the things that the game is going to challenge you here as a coach is, okay, if I got an inexperienced guy and I'm going into a very 95,000 screaming fans, do I want to change my playbook to maybe give that quarterback, you know, five or six very high percentage completion opportunities to help his confidence go up before I try to go over the top? Or do I try to play my regular game knowing that once you get sacked right in front of the student section, you might mentally go to pieces? And all of that is, I think, that's different in a way that you're going to see it in Madden, because everybody in Madden, just like everybody in the NFL, is a pro. In college, some of those guys are pros. Some of those guys are very athletic enterprise car rental managers and right, like do not have the same upside.
Right.
And that's not an insult, right? Like, but that's
hey, look, I went to Indiana. That's my entire team for about the last 25 years. Okay. So like, yes, yeah. That's why I need this game. Again, Indiana just got scheduled against UCLA. Saw that come out in an early college football schedule, and my lifetime of Meet You in Pasadena jokes actually comes true for me and my friends. And, you know, it's just amazing watching college football evolve in real time. And then watching this game evolve over time, it probably needed about a decade layoff to really sort of reinvent itself and not become a Madden reskin. Again, I'm not a gamer either. I just like certain video games, and this is one of them. The biggest complaint everyone has about Madden is it's the same damn game every year, just new players, new jersey numbers, a new stadium if your team built one, but it's the same thing over and over again. And this doesn't feel like that, correct?
That was my experience. So I don't know if you've heard this expression before. Like, this is something that's come up as I've talked to other developers at EA and elsewhere, and they're talking about making a video game, that no matter how many people are involved, it still takes 9 months to make a baby. And what that means is you can have a gigantic company and throw all the engineers and programmers and designers at it that you want, but to make a really developed product or to make something that's unique, you need time. You can't just throw more and more people at it. And the development cycle for Madden or NBA 2K or annual releases is very short, and it's difficult to kind of build that kind of infrastructure. This game that you guys are going to play here in about 6 weeks, it's been in development for 3 years. And the core infrastructure of how stadiums are rendered, how uniforms are set up, how the playbook is implemented, it's all completely new. I hope that fans will be able to, I'm sure it's not going to have everything people want, but you'll be able to tell this was not something that was made in 6 months and we just updated the uniform set.
Right. As I think you've already found out through some comments and demands of what you know, and we want to know it right now. Some people are very reasonable. And some are not. And there's no way this game will satisfy everybody, but it really feels like they tried to take a real good swing. And all indications early on is that they made good contact. They connected here. Did you play on PlayStation 5 or Xbox?
I played on a PS5. I think all of the Orlando setups were on PS5.
Was in terms of game mechanics, before we get into the different modes and whatnot, did you mess around with different offenses, read options, air raids, triple options, wishbone, you know, all the different quirky college options? They got to be in there, right?
Oh, yeah. It's 134 different playbooks. And I think that... The detail for how those playbooks vary from school to school, now that you have a more powerful processing system, is going to show up even more, right? When Wake Forest runs the read option with that slow mesh, where it looks like they're walking down the wedding aisle together and break at the last possible moment, looks different than when Kansas State or Oregon or Navy run relatively similar plays. And you'll see that within these playbooks. I messed around mostly with three different systems, with a typical one back shotgun, more standardized college football offense. I went to Ohio State and ran a couple of plays with that team. I did run a lot of triple option and I ran some air raid. I would say that mechanically, both the passing system and the option system both play pretty different from 2014. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Running the option, I think, will be a little bit harder. The game doesn't exactly hold your hand quite as much in figuring out who on the defense you're supposed to be reading. You have different gameplay options to do a short pitch or a long pitch, depending on where the quarterback is on the field when you're running the option play. But when you make the read successfully, because I think the AI blocking system is more sophisticated, it feels very satisfying when you see somebody completely overcommit and you just whoop, pass the ball over to the side, and now Army got an 11-yard gain, which doesn't play the same way at all in Madden. I think people are going to love that.
By the way to incorporate the football as a prop into this. That was fantastic. Matt, maybe more than any other video game, this isn't about going online to play. It's not about playing your neighbor next door and your buddy sitting. It's about playing by yourself in dynasty mode. That's where I think the money of this game is. Can you tell us a little bit about the dynasty mode and running a program, and how much the new wrinkles of college football's ecosphere are included with transfer portals and name, image, and likeness, and recruiting in the portal as opposed to recruiting a high school senior? Did you have enough time to get deep into the game's probably most precious mode?
I know there were, I think, two big differences that we saw that I'm happy to talk to, walk through with folks, right? So if you played Dynasty Mode the last year, 2014, there was a coach skill tree. And as you did certain tasks throughout the game, you would get experience points and you could decide where you wanted to level up with your skill tree. But everybody did it the exact same way, right? You'd level up your recruiting tree to 20 so you can get instant commits and flip people and make your talent acquisition much easier. Then maybe you'd go back to game management. And then at 3 or 4 seasons, you could be completely maxed out. you can't do that anymore because the coach skill tree system is substantially more complicated. I think there's 11 different potential trees, and they kind of fork off of some larger ones, right? Between recruiting and motivating and tactics. But it's set up so you can't max all of those things out, and you get different complementary bonuses depending, but no coach is perfect at everything. So you have to make some strategic decisions about your philosophy. And now at the first time you can hire a staff and they have their own skill trees. So you get to decide, okay, if I want to be a recruiting centric guy, do I want to hire two other recruiters and get stacking bonuses? Should I get somebody here who knows how to work a whiteboard? Should I work somebody here who knows how to actually like coach people up? That's a challenge. Then the recruiting is completely different. It's not a straight point system anymore. You're allocating hours. And if let's say, I think, you know, looking at the chat here, let's say many people here want to start with San Jose State or a program like San Jose State. You're going to find that it's going to be very difficult to sign 4- and 5-star guys completely out of the box, even if you have one very successful season, win the Mountain West, because a lot of elite players are going to have deal breakers. They're going to say, I won't consider you unless you get 4 national TV games a year. I won't consider you unless you have an average roster rating of such and such. And so it's going to take time to build up that roster. The game will let you know, hey, if you want to meet this qualification, your program has to do X, Y, or Z, and maybe you can do that in 1, 2, 3, 5 years. So at a San Jose or a Nevada or a Kent State, I think you're also going to find yourself not just recruiting 3-star athletes, but looking into the portal. One of the kind of, I think, fun tweaks about portal recruiting, beyond the fact that you're going to have to retain your own guys, and they're going to let you know if they're considering the portal and you can adjust those things. But if you're recruiting a high school athlete and you finish 2nd or 3rd, and then they go somewhere else and they hit the portal, you're going to have a built-in advantage because I already know you. So then you have the strategic thing here. Do I spend time developing this 4-star guy I know I'm not going to get, but I love my chances of getting him next year after he fails to make UCLA's depth chart and he's 3rd and decides to come over here? That's also a thing that coaches have to do here in real life. So it's a way more expansive way of managing your roster.
Can you incorporate a new school in any conference that you want? Can you create your own program, build out uniforms, pick a stadium, and all that fun stuff that really made, I thought, 2014 a huge success?
You can. They have brought back the team builder functionality. The way that's going to be set up is it's going to be browser-based. I'm not sure if there's a companion app for it or not, but you'll be able to design the uniforms, and there's a stadium builder and all those things. So if you theoretically wanted to put in, say, UC Davis, right, or Sacramento State, or the some made up school,
can you reform the Pac-12?
You could. The conference realignment is extremely a part of this system. I think the one thing that maybe other people might be like a little frustrated with is, you have to replace a school if you're going to add a new one in. Like, it's hard capped, the game's logic, at 134 teams. So if you're going to add in Sac State, we might have to, we might have to get rid of Stanford. That will be terribly sad, right? Or we might have to get Rutgers out of the Big Ten.
My wife went to Cal. She's all for it,
So. Sure. I'm trying to pander to the home crowd here, right? Like, that's there's a couple of different ways that you could do this. I mean, it's granular enough, I believe, that if you start, and you're in the Mountain West and you change conferences, I think even the patches on the uniforms and the logos in the stadium, I think that all changes. So there's an enormous amount of flexibility.
Road to Glory is another mode that people really liked, where instead of becoming a coach and running a program, you became a high school player. You got recruited. You chose where you went. Maybe you transferred. Maybe you didn't. Road to Glory's in this, but it's not quite what it used to be. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's true. The Road to Glory mode does not start in high school anymore. When you begin the mode, you will decide what kind of recruit you want to be. Am I going to be a 5-star guy? Am I a 3-star? Am I a walk-on? And you'll fill out this kind of questionnaire about the kind of things that are important to you. Are you most interested in early playing time? Are you most interested in a championship contender? How do you think about school? What do you think about NIL? And based on your caliber of recruit, your position, and what you're interested in, you'll get an offer sheet, list of schools, and then you begin the game. And the core component of Road to Glory this year, from my vantage point here, is about time resource management. One of the difficult things about being a college athlete is you do not have the time to do everything that you need to do or want to do because your life is so structured. So the game will say, listen, you got 5 categories here. You've got your player health, which you need to spend time to manage here. If you don't get massages, if you don't rest by late November, you're going to be able to barely stand. you have your academics, because if you don't at least pretend to study sometimes, you could be ineligible. You won't get to play. You have your actual training, which impacts like your ratings, right? You want to spend time in the evening and run around with people. You have your leadership and your coach trust, which impacts your playing time. And then you have your NIL branding, because, you know, in real life, you're going to want to spend some time signing autographs or doing deals. And some of those deals can give you performance bonuses, right? You sign an NIL deal with a deep tissue massage company, you might get a health and recovery bonus. You sign a deal with Gatorade, you might run a little bit faster because you got some extra stuff, right? You know, a little bit like you had in 2K. So that's kind of the big challenge, is figuring out, how do I want to best allocate my time? Because I can't max everything out, and there's no perfect way to play. Do your teammates ask if you want to go study this evening? Maybe you don't need to in order to get a B in the class. Do you want to go with them and build, you know, team chemistry? Do you want to go hit the gym and boost your strength rating because you're playing against Auburn next week and you don't want to get turned into ground into powder? Who knows? That's the core part of the game, and I think EA wants this game mode to go faster so it can be replayable. I think you'll be able to finish a career probably in about 15 hours.
So, full disclosure, I was the voice in a few video games. I did several years as the halftime host of NBA 2K before I got replaced by three nobodies, Ernie, Kenny, and Shaq. Strong. I would have gone with them too, to be quite honest with you. But I know what it's like to record for video games. You have to do, you know, your baseline sentence, and then an accelerated sentence, and then a depressed sentence, and then the miracle of the algorithm makes you sound like you're talking about what just happened in real time. Multiple announce crews. That's never been in a game before. And that's in this game. There's multiple announce crews. I can't even imagine the hundreds, if not thousands, of recording hours that were spent putting that together.
It's like 12,000 hours or something crazy, right? I think it's five different announcers. Desmond Howard, I believe, is mostly just doing announcing related to Ultimate Team. But you have two separate crews, depending on whether you're the game of the week or the national championship game, or whether you're the 11 a.m. Indiana-Purdue kickoff, or Indiana-Illinois, I guess, right? Like for the non-Big Noon Saturday.
Thank you for making it an even lesser interesting Indiana football game.
Yeah, right. So, and we actually talked to Chris Fowler about this a little bit. Because you couldn't use any of the audio assets from the last game. You have different voice talent, and the game's changed so much. So it's been, that's what it was. It took multiple years of saying the same thing again and again and again. And some of the audio assets in there, like Chris Fowler was telling us, you're never going to hear this. I had to record a segment about winning a triple overtime game off a walk-off safety, which has never happened in actual football. But we had to make sure that was in the game. He's like, I've never said the word Akron so much in my life until I did this game. You know, I only got to play for a couple of hours. And I'm sure when anybody logs 70 hours into this game, you're going to hear repeats of anything. But I definitely thought that the voice acting complemented the game's focus on high-level presentation.
Forget about the big bowl games. Obviously, they're all in there. Yeah. Like, do we have the Pop-Tart Bowl with the Pop-Tart descending into the toaster? Is there a Duke's Mayonnaise Bowl where a coach gets hit with a jar of mayonnaise at the end of this? Like, how far did they take the brand partnerships? Because I know they're looking to incorporate commercials into these games. You know, I think in movie it's called Sabrosa advertising. Like, you know, your favorite character just happens to be drinking a can of Coke. Well, Coke made that deal.
Sure. I mean, there was the whole Wayne's World bit about this, right? Where it's like, right. I can't believe people would sell out as I eat this Pizza Hut. and there's, I think, I've written about this in the newsletter. Like, I think that's going to be a revenue generating opportunity for schools too, to say like, hey, you can buy my billboard out here, but for a little bit of extra money, you can also buy my digital billboard next year in EA Sports. Like, that's a thing to consider. On the bowl front, my understanding is that there were conversations about putting the Pop-Tarts mascot in the game or the toaster celebration. And that was one of the things where it's like, I don't think we have the time to animate this yet, like maybe next year. But the Pop-Tarts bowl as an entity is in the game. All of the bowls are in the game. The one thing that will be a little bit different is there's a handful of bowl games that are played at stadiums that are not college football stadiums, not or NFL stadiums, like the bowl at Fenway Park. Fenway Park is not in the game this year. That will be at some kind of generic stadium.
Well, I think Northwestern's playing a few games at Wrigley Field. They probably don't have Wrigley Field in the game.
They don't have Wrigley Field yet. There's a game in Dublin to open the season. Ireland does not exist in this universe yet. There's 150 stadiums. So, you know, if you're playing a big out of conference neutral site game in Las Vegas, like that game will be that stadium's in the game. The Pop-Tarts Bowl is at Camping World Stadium, which used to hold the Pro Bowl. So that stadium's in the game. I think these other fields, particularly NFL fields, that's something that the developers are talking about. We want to include in the near future to be able to maybe play a game at Lambeau or to play a game at Soldier Field. You can't do that yet, but that's something that's not impossible to do.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this game. It drops July 19th. I think if you spend a little more money, you get to play it 3 days earlier than everyone. I've waited a decade. I can wait another 72 hours. I don't need the Madden and EA, college football game deluxe edition. I'm just going to buy the bare bones edition and have fun with it. It's again, I'm not playing it online. I'm not playing with my neighbor. It's just something I do at night before I go to bed. That's I've always enjoyed this game. I've always enjoyed your work, and I stumbled upon it years ago, like when you were covering the dissolving Pac-12 and looking at Title IX issues. Like, as we said at the beginning of this, you're not a video game guy. You're a nuts and bolts college business reporter. And I would encourage anyone who's interested in that to check out your Extra Points newsletter. It's very, very well written, and supporting independent journalism has always meant a lot to me. In the last 14 months, it's meant more. So I'm absolutely signed up and subscribed to you, man, to help support you and what you're doing. Tell us a little bit about how you started uncovering and pulling back the first few onion layers that brought you into this.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I a pretty big component of a lot of the work that I do is utilizing something called open records requests, which allow nosy reporters like me or anybody even watching this to file some paperwork, and you can get copies of government emails or government contracts. And for public institutions like most of FBS college football, you know, that includes emails from athletic directors, and which you can use to get game contracts.
Well, sunshine law, right? Isn't
that, that's exactly like that. Every state has their own different version. So I was using some of those requests to go write about to write about universities trying to do new licensed beer, new licensed products as ways to get extra revenue. You have a couple of smaller schools. New Mexico State's famous for doing this. They have like official Pistol Pete whiskey and beer and coffee and salsa and this whole thing because they don't have SEC television money. And it was through looking through there, I got a copy of the original licensing agreement for the video game, which laid out, here's how much you're paying everybody. Here's when we're trying to go get the game to come out. Here's how we're trying to handle some of the licensing questions. So I got that kind of by accident and then realized, I didn't even think I could be filing these requests to learn more about the communications between schools and EA. And as you get farther along, then you realize that many of these athletic directors want to share this information with you. If you're a guy at San Jose State and it's like the middle of the summer, like, holy crap, of course I want people talking about San Jose State. Yeah, right, whatever. This is everything we submitted, right? Totally. Like, yeah, here's every bit of audio, whatever you want. Like, even some private schools gave this to me if I just asked politely. And once you do that for a while, then suddenly somebody at EA will call you and be like, what the hell are you doing filing all these requests? Just talk to me. I'm like, well, I did. You didn't pick up the phone, but now you are. And that's now I've been able to, you know, have sources at the company side, on the developer side, on the licensing side, and the university side. And it's been fun and gratifying to learn more about how this is all connected.
As you study all this, as you uncover all this, do you think in any way it's heading in a good direction for college football? Are we going to absolutely take a few laps around the black hole and just descend into it? Like, it's impossible to even predict what 2 years in college football will look like from right now, much less 10 years down the road. I envision a future where conferences are totally disintegrated and we have the top 65 power 65 teams in the country. Where do you think this heads?
Yeah. The unsatisfying answer I tell people is, if I had a really good crystal ball, I'd charge a hell of a lot more money for this newsletter. You know, like there's so many there's so many unknowns. But to your point, like, yes, it is possible, like, that we have a world where the Big Ten and the SEC and the Mountain West don't exist. We have Champions League presented by Learfield and BlackRock Capital, and we have everybody else. But that is the thing that could happen. We could have a world in 3 years where there's no NCAA, and we have a national college basketball tournament that's sponsored by USA Basketball, and we have sport-specific federations that play a larger role in sport development. We could have a new organization that is centered more around low majors. You know, I think this house settlement, there's been always a lot of talk about, hey, maybe the Big Ten and the SEC break away. They make all the money. Well, I'll tell you, like, the schools that are mad as hell right now, they're in the Big Sky. They're in the Big West. They're in the Southland Conference. They're, you know, these much smaller institutions that simply don't have the professionalization challenges that the USCs and UCLAs do are now shouldering that legal bill. So on one hand, I don't take an apocalyptic view of anything here. Like, they're still going to play football. I'm still going to watch. I'm still going to watch the basketball, even if it's got a corporate jersey in the patch, or maybe they're not in the same gen ed classes. That, right,
nothing
in.
Makes us walk away from the sports we say we're about to walk away from. It never happens. Even racists were like, I'll never watch the NFL again because of Colin Kaepernick. All of them were back week one. All of them.
We as consumers are terrible at predicting our own future behavior. We heard this with NIL. We heard this with cost of attendance, with Alston and everything. We're not totally sure. But what I do know, particularly for mid and low majors, which make up a big chunk of my readership, is that the financial model of how they operate their departments is going to have to change.
Yeah.
And some of that, I think, will be a net positive. It will mean less administrative waste. It will mean athletes getting more direct compensation. I think that's a positive thing. Some of it could be negative. Could mean the loss of scholarship opportunities, and it could mean some institutions deciding we can't operate in this world. We need to be in a world that's closer to NYU or Hopkins or Williams than Eastern Washington. And it's going to be different from school to school for sure.
So look, I'm not a journalist. I'm just a host. But I did bury the lead. Thank you. E. Scott Burns brought this up. A daily viewer here. Tell us about the dog in the background. That dog looks very comfortable behind you.
She's very happy. Her name is Peach. We adopted her about 3 years ago during the pandemic. My daughters, who are 9 and 6, named her after Princess Peach. I think she's part pit, part who the hell knows, right?
Because
she's a shelter dog, and she gets lonely if I do a bunch of TV segments in a row. So she wants to come down and hang out in my office with me.
I'm not saying she was the best part of the interview, but she's the second best part of this interview for sure.
I get it.
Matt, thank you very, very much. Again, I hope that the attention that you are getting for covering this story parlays itself into more subscriptions, more people reading your stuff. I've been following you for years, and I felt lucky when I'm like, oh, this guy that I'm happen to be following is now into a story that I'm definitely into. So continued success to you, man. Thank you very, very much for stopping on by and illuminating, what is really, is it unfair to say this is the most anticipated college or just any video game of all time, right?
I don't know, maybe not video game period. Cause I mean, GTA 6 is different. Right. And sure. This is not a game that has, I think, global appeal, but is it the most anticipated sports video game ever? Unquestionably. And our corner of the internet, I think it's the most anticipated, because for people who are not capital G gamers, they are all in on this kind of thing. And it's a blessing. I appreciate you having me on. I appreciate how many people are really excited about this. And I'm going to try to meet that need here the best that I can.
Matt, stick around. Thank you so much for your time.
You bet. All right. Be well, everybody.
There he is, Matt Brown, who is all over a story. It's amazing what a little elbow grease and hard work will do. And look at what he stumbled into. He's sitting ringside for as big of a story as you're going to find coming from the world of college anything these days. I mean, if I could give you another NIL story or just talk about the college football video game, I know what people would want. So look, I wanted this to be a very specific show today, but there are a few other things to talk about and do, namely by telling you that my man Ike has the perfect lunch idea for you waiting at one of his stores today. Get yourself to Ike's. Let me get the lower third graphic. Here we go. Are you ready for this? You're going to be so impressed. I think I got everything spelled right today. Use promo code GanjaJar when you check out on the Ike's Rewards app to save $4.20. Get it? ganja jar, 420. You're a clever bunch. You've kept it up. Not available in Santa Rosa, San Mateo, and Redwood City locations, but any other Ike's is ready to go with the promo code GANJAJAR. Use it, save 420, and be very, very happy with the delicious sandwich that shows up at your front door, gets to your front mouth, and you put in your own belly. Speaking of putting delicious things in your belly, go ahead to the Dubliner on West Portal. Say hi to Kenny, who's always behind the bar, and he will make sure that your belly is taken care of. And then you can give the $4.20 that you saved on your sandwich to Kenny as a tip. And that's how the whole Plus ecosystem supports itself. Support the show by hitting like and subscribe. Support the show by supporting my sponsors. Support the Dubliner by giving the 420 that you saved at Ike to Kenny for a tip. And boom, this is how it all works together. This is how one hand washes the other. Just a couple of other things before we go today. And these things will certainly be expanded upon on Friday's Wake Up. Yours truly and Larry Krueger are going to be at it at 8:45 a.m. live West Coast time on all the latest Niners. And for the first time, we have some things to actually talk about that feel like it's news directly related and tangentially related to the 49ers. Number one, Juwan Jennings has an agreement with the 49ers. He's back through 2025. It's a two-year deal, but because he didn't exercise the restricted free agent tender, it's akin to a one-year extension, basically, and he's got a contract worth 15.4, including $10.5 million guaranteed. Like, I saw this come down, and I said, well, this is going to piss off Ayuk. And someone's like, well, look, Ayuk is operating on a level of money that, you know, this isn't going to really bother him. But he might be a little upset that this was the priority to get done with the 49ers. It's obviously a lot easier to fit into their salary cap situation than Brandon Ayuk, who, again, the price of Ayuk just keeps on going up. Jalen Waddle of the Miami Dolphins is a three-year, $84.75 million extension, $76 million guaranteed. And, hey, all of a sudden, the Miami Dolphins are telling you that wide receiver two is now worth $25 million. You know, wide receiver one is getting Tyreek Hill money. Wide receiver two is getting wide receiver one money in Miami, which means wide receiver one money goes up everywhere. This is probably why a deal with Ayuk should have been struck. Every day they wait is another dollar they got to add on top of the pile of money that they're already apparently reluctant to give to Ayuk. So there is a whole bunch of that to talk about, as Brian Schneider is about to become a very important coach on this football team, because you're starting to see the stories come out like 32 NFL teams are all in a race to try to figure out the advantages and disadvantages of the new kickoff rule that's going to be implied. There will be teams that pick it up quickly and have an advantage. There will be teams that are behind the curve. From a special team standpoint, the 49ers have not been ahead of any special teams curve. So will a whole new way of looking at special teams be something that provides opportunity, or is going to compound itself into a lot of demerits for the 49ers? That's up to Brian Schneider and his coaching staff on special teams. And we'll be talking more about that with Larry on Friday. And I believe we'll come on back around 11 and have a little sports phone get together where we'll be taking your calls, wrapping up the week. And the only other thing I got to tell you is that yesterday the Giants lost to the Phillies. It wasn't even a close game. Schwarber homered before I got out of the beer line, so I missed my boy going deep. But then the organist played a stash, so they knew I was there. They knew I was there. I got a fish song on the organ. Got a Schwarber home run that at least I heard while I was getting a beer. And it was one of the more gorgeous days in the history of San Francisco. I mean, yesterday was the day that if you're lucky, you get 8 to 10 of those in a calendar year in San Francisco. Not a cloud in the sky, like 80 degrees, just picture perfect sundress conditions, California gorgeous. Ugh. It wasn't a good ball game for the Giants, but it really was. It was a great day at the yard. And I had bought a $5 Christmas promotion ticket, went with a buddy, started in the upper deck, and then just kind of walked around. I've spent so many days and nights just sitting in the press box, enjoying one of the single greatest press box views still available in Major League Baseball. I was hardly suffering in there. But I love that park, and I love to see it from different angles. So we did about two innings. We did two innings sitting in the sun, then did two innings moving up to the shade because, hey, man, my arm's getting a little red over here. Let's get in the shade. Then we went down in the concourse, hung out in the outfield for a little while, hung out in the bleachers, went out to the arcade, swung back around. We're sitting in, 106? Again, looking for a little shade, a different angle. Buddy of mine, Evan, was like, hey, dude, I just happened to be here front row. I got two tickets right behind me, two empty seats behind me. And the usher wants you to know, oi, oi, oi. I was like, really? Oi, oi, oi! That means he'll let me sit there. And so we ended up sitting right next to the Phillies dugout for like the last three innings of the game. It was fantastic. It really was. So I always like going to a not sold out baseball game where you can not necessarily improve your seat to the extent that I did, where you go from, you know, upper deck to next to the dugout. But I love to walk around. I love to look at it from different angles. And it was just a great, gorgeous, beautiful day. And that ballpark, let me tell you, there's not a lot perfect about the San Francisco Giants, except that ballpark. It really is absolutely perfect. I thought that was a perfect interview with Matt, where you got to know what was coming. If this is a show that appealed to you, you're excited about this video game. If you're not into video games, I totally get if you ducked out of the show, you know, 20 minutes ago. I understand. Back tomorrow with Kruger at 8:45 on both of our channels. Please hit like and subscribe, not just to my channel, but Larry's as well. Membership certainly available. Support the sponsors. Like and subscribe this bad boy. You all support each other. You're all totally fantastic human beings. And don't let anyone else tell you any different. It would be the wrong information. Thanks for stopping by here to get a little of your information. We'll have much more in the world of actual real sports, not video game sports, on tomorrow's show. But until then, please do remember that sports don't build character, they reveal it. And like that, he's gone.